All right, hello.
Today we're having a conversation with the Convo team talking about the importance of, you know, decentralized conversations, which is, you could say, one of the things we're having even right now. Before we get into all of that, you know, a quick intro would be in order. So, Anudit, if you don't mind giving us a quick intro about yourself, and then we can take it from there.
Perfect. Yeah. So, a quick introduction about myself. I am Anudit Nagar. One of the co-founders of Convo Space, and we're building out tech that just helps improve the way you converse online, primarily through Convo Space, and giving just developers all the tools and libraries they need to just be able to add social to any platform out there.
Awesome, awesome. Thank you for that. You know, again, you're no guest to me, at least. You know, we had a very lengthy conversation that was really fun yesterday. So what exactly is the Convo Space? And you know, why is the Convo Space, beyond, you know, just the quick overview you gave us as to the tool to add tooling to for developers, add tooling, social tooling to pretty much any Web3 application, or maybe even beyond. Why did you choose to venture in this, to build this protocol?
Yeah, I think one of the primary reasons that we started out was just, you know, we saw this disconnect between the way we sort of just have conversations online. And we saw a way in which we could sort of combine them in a way that it's just much more simpler for users. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of ways in which we're conversing online are great, but one of the ways in which they lack is just like the silos they've built up for our lives. I mean, right now we have to juggle 5 to 10 different applications just to be able to talk to anyone. And all of those applications serve like different purposes and have really no continuity in real life. But if you were just out on the road talking to your friend, having like a real life conversation, you can really talk about anything. You can point to things, you can have a conversation about them and switch contexts in real time without actually breaking away from your work, right? Mm-hmm. You have that seamless ability of conversing with your friend and not having to like go to a specific room just to be able to talk about a specific thing.
It is the, and based, so I'll just piggyback, a lot of the things we'll be following up from the conversation we had again yesterday, which is talking about how the Convo Space is sort of solving continuity of conversations essentially. And how, I suppose, again, I've had some time to think about, you know, some of the things we talked about. So why, how did you see this to be something that needed to be solved? And why aren't you building this in Web 2?
I mean, I think Web 2 is the way people sort of just interact everywhere online. So one of the reasons why we didn't want to build it from Web 2, I mean, it's still a very Web 2 experience. So the experience and the way people interact with those applications has to be Web 2. But then the like sort of the infrastructure, the backend, and all of the tech that we use, we decided to go with Web 3 primarily because of the way Web 3 is really structured to make sure that anything and all data that you own is always owned by you. So you have that kind of data sovereignty and ownership, like sort of just built into the ecosystem. Then you have concepts of things like, you know, accounts and private keys, in which ways you can build, you can essentially program money in ways that you just couldn't before in the world of Web 2, which just opens up so many different use cases for us and really just for the entire ecosystem. So I think Web 3, in terms of just like a technical standpoint, is just an incredible way to actually just rebuild social and actually try and give actual value and redirect the value that the platform generates back to the users, instead of like a common paradigm of, you know, Web 2, wherein even though the kind of content that you're posting on Facebook, you don't really get any kind of revenue for it. You might just get for some of it. Even Snapchat has like, if it's revenue programs, and even you can get money on YouTube if you upload your own content. And I think even now with Twitter, you can sort of start monetizing the communities, but it's not really built. It's not an ecosystem that is built for that kind of purpose, right? So Web3 just allows you to program money in just so many effective ways in which you can redirect and rebuild social in so many new ways. So yeah, it opened up a lot of opportunities for us. That's why we primarily use Web3, but we wanted to keep the experience as Web2 as possible.
Yeah, it makes sense that the experience being as Web2 as possible is important, because a lot of the things we're familiar with right now, again, you know, from yesterday, it's still very Web2-ish. And yes, working with a decentralized, you know, ecosystem and blockchain makes sense, really, that we're building this type of a tool in in a Web3 and a Web3 crypto like environment, because there are just a handful of things that building on Web2 will not afford us, and so it does make sense. However, though, how is so we're building on the blockchain, how are we solving the issue of privacy? And I suppose you guys are building in a very good time now that like zero knowledge is properly being actively developed and it's being, you know, used more frequently and more often. So how exactly is the Convo space solving the privacy issue, and are you exploring zero knowledge proofs as a means of solving privacy?
Absolutely. I mean, zero knowledge proofs are incredibly fun to even just code and build. It's just so much interesting math to work with. But yeah, I think we're definitely exploring zero knowledge proofs. The identity part of Convo space, which is called Omnid, manages, and you can sort of even generate zero knowledge proofs for a lot of identity data. So yeah, they're definitely cool. And one of the interesting ways in which you can sort of just have zero knowledge proofs in a social environment and just making it more democratized, it's just that, you know, if you wanted to prove whether or not a person was just a human being, whether or not they had like even something as simple as like the way you can have KYC natively built in a much more simpler way is that, let's say if that blockchain account had their Twitter verified, but having like a Twitter verified account, by that I mean, you know, having like a proper account. So whether or not if you have like a phone number that's connected to your Twitter account, and then maybe that Twitter account has that kind of like two-step verification, and maybe we can query that and we can turn it into a zero knowledge proof, which can then be utilized by almost any app in the smart contract, right? So what that allows us to do is that now any conversations that you're having online, you can just see whether or not this is an actual human being on Twitter, whether or not they have like a verified phone number attached to their account, and just be able to do cool stuff like that. So I think it definitely enables a lot of ways in which we can tackle Sybil and tackle just weeding out spam conversations and spam messages. So yeah, I think zero knowledge proofs is super cool. And there are just so many different platforms and blockchains and applications that are just building in the space. So it's very fun to see.
Yes, no, zero knowledge proofs are really, really fun. But how does the team intend on using it? Does it intend to use it to solve, like, you know, privacy in terms of the conversations being had, or privacy in terms of identity themselves?
Privacy in terms of identity would be the way to go right now, at least for us. Privacy in terms of just like conversations happens through like encryption for us. That's just much simpler. Right. And because for the conversations that are already public, there is really no need for us to keep them private as such, because they're already public. But yeah, privacy in terms of identity is super important. If we wanted to even just join into this Twitter space and wanted to make sure that people only who had accounts on Daplist are on this Twitter space, but didn't really want to reveal our addresses publicly, that's a way to sort of, one of the use cases is zero knowledge proofs. And I think that would be just super important. But yeah, identity, and that's the way sort of we are tackling conversations and zero knowledge proofs together at ConvoSpace.
Cool, that's interesting. So essentially, when we were having a lot of the conversations yesterday, I was thinking more so in terms of text, written conversation. And so, you know, so those are like, you know, DMs and all of that stuff. But now that we're on Twitter spaces, that I'm thinking more into how exactly, when we build, you could say, a Web3 version of, you know, an audio on platform where we can have these types of conversations, I can somewhat see users' details and privacy details are abstracted away from a text type of platform. How exactly could that be solved if and when we have a, you know, audio-like experience like this in a Web3? And then the Convo space, because again, conversations span through audio and written, the Convo space is sort of like, also, I suppose the question then would be, are there toolings for these types of conversations via the Convo space yet? By these types, I mean audio, auditory conversations.
So, I mean, if you were just having like a live Twitter space, if you wanted to build that on top of Convo space, I don't think you can do it right now, because the internal tech with which you would build such a thing would be more tending towards like real-time video communication. So the way it works is using RTC, which is like a completely different tech.
Yeah.
So I mean, that would just be a much more efficient way. But if you wanted to build something like, you know, voice notes and chats, that might be a much better way to use Conma Space there.
Ah, that makes sense. So essentially, we are focused on the Conma Space's focus is primarily on written conversations at this point in time. Cool. But then let's just let's theoretically think through it, right? So we have, let's assume that the future to build decentralized Twitter Space type of thing exists, right? The technology exists. Uh-huh. And it's a, how do you see that working with privacy and abstracting away users' data? That's an interesting one, right? Because we're all here. Is out in the open. You know who I am, quote unquote. And we're moving beyond pseudonymous identity. So I'm not just abstracting away my own username, email, and all of that stuff. I'm expecting the Convo Space, you could say, via zero knowledge proof to sort of solve that problem. Do you think, so I suppose there are two questions. Do you think multiple questions.
There's just too many nuances in that question.
Do you think that is necessary? And let's just theoretically play with that idea. It's an interesting one.
Okay. So I think first you'll have to break down the kind of conversations that you're having and what's the intended use case of that conversation. So whenever we are having a conversation, the primary goal is to take something away from the conversation, right? So if you wanted to build effective conversations, one of the key ways in which we can have an effective conversation is to first decide what are sort of the goals and the metrics, maybe even just understand the people that are having those conversations, right? Without the right people, we won't be able to have the right conversations, which wouldn't lead to the right insights. So now that we've gotten those kinds of people, then we have to be able to understand, okay, who those people really are. Once we actually have an understanding about who those people are, that's the kind of privately identifying information that at the end of the day leads to good, positive, healthy conversations with the public. So now that we have the kind of privately identifying information for those speakers, right? So let's say if we wanted to abstract that kind of privately identifying information away, then we would need some sort of proofs. The whole idea of zero knowledge proofs is to be able to prove something without revealing an individual's identity. If you wanted to prove that, let's say if you are quote unquote qualified to be able to having a conversation about, let's say, social or identity, which means that we would first have to be able to have enough infrastructure or data about you. And just, you know, at the end of the day, being able to prove that whether or not you've proven your credence in a specific task in that universe, right? So I think at the end of the day, it just boils down to being able to understand users in a very qualitative manner about whether or not they've done maybe previous Twitter spaces in that specific topic, whether or not they've written content that has been appreciated by other peers in that same group. And we can make all of that happen using zero knowledge proofs, because now we only need to abstract that. So by default, whenever we talk to someone, we already have that trust until and unless they say something that explicitly violates that trust, right? So if somebody comes out and says, hey, maybe I think that, you know, one is equal to two, but you know very well that one is not equal to two. So now you by default sort of just lower that person's reputation in your head start trusting it less. So I think it has to be like an incredibly dynamic movement where now if a person has proven their trust, then they've gained it, right? But at the same time, we need to be able to prove against it. So now we have to be able to find out whether or not that information, that kind of data is actually trustworthy, right? Tons of layers into it.
Yes.
But at the end of the day, I just think it just comes down to identifying users and understanding whether or not the actions that they've previously had, because you are essentially your past. So we need to be able to at least quantify it to a certain degree in a very qualitative manner.
Yeah, and in a manner that is, what would you call it, true, right? Because anyone can come in and, you know, make the claim or what would you call it, pirate other people's content and create content in a specific topic. And then, because if that is the metric we're using to verify if they are, you know, eligible to have certain conversations, read your previous statement, then, you know, we will have to put certain measures to further verify the fact that they indeed sort of created that content. And it just had multiple layers into, like, you know, authenticating sort of the user and ensuring that they are indeed qualified. And I suppose this is the difference between, this is essentially the importance of, like, some form of a certification in, you could say, Web 2 world. Mm-hmm. The only way someone can prove to you legitimately, as much as that is possible, that they have the necessary skills is to show you, oh, hey, I took this exam and I passed this exam. Mm-hmm. Trust mm-hmm. that I can do the job. And but here in, like, Web 2 and Web 3, rather, as the world is evolving, there is an interesting amount of word of mouth type of trustlessness.
Yes,
trust,
exactly. Like, just exactly. social trust, and trust is yeah, always exactly. built in communities. Yeah, so see, and that kind of word of mouth is definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's definitely an interesting idea to explore whenever we're thinking of, you could say, privacy and you know, working with zero knowledge proofs and solving these types of problems. However, I suppose we could, you know, geek and work over that much later. today we're talking about, like, the importance of decentralized conversations. And before we get into that, I want us to talk possibly about the importance of free speech itself. Because, again, when the team, you know, mentioned I'll be having a conversation with the Convo Space team, again, the Convo conversations are talking and thinking, you know, to think, you know, so I'll just walk my way backwards into that.
Mm-hmm.
To think effectively, you most likely need to write. To write effectively, you most likely need to have conversations. Essentially, to be able to function as a useful human in today's society, you need to think, write, and speak. Those three things are essential. And even more so, you need to be able to speak to an extent where you probably violate certain social norms, you could say, certain socially accepted terminologies, and step into the unknown where you could be criticized. However, safely, right? You need to be criticized safely, and then mm-hmm. we come back, and then your opinions are refined and your thoughts are refined. But those need to happen regardless. They need to happen. But what we have currently in the world as we know it isn't that. People, you know, again, I'm not necessarily a fan of Andrew Tate, but we know that he was banned a couple weeks or months ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was violating what free speech should technically mean. It technically means that any single individual cannot come out and voice their opinion, however extreme, you could say. And then the powers that be can shut anyone up. And that is a bit of a problem. Because while we could argue... Okay, sorry, just go on before I...
Go ahead. Yeah. I think the sheer number of questions and the train of thoughts in my head. Right. So, yeah, I think just the question of, you know, should a tolerant community tolerate intolerance? So mm-hmm. I think that kind of question mm-hmm. it comes up a lot in terms of when we start to define societies and how they should function effectively. So for societies to function effectively and for everyone to be happy or at least be satisfied, everyone needs to be able to say their word, right? But at the end of the day, it shouldn't matter what you like. You should be able to still do whatever it is that you like. So I think that's where a nuance where if people didn't like Andrew Tate, well, they could just stop watching his videos, or they could just stop doing, like, nobody is forcing necessarily to watch or view his content. But I also get the side that, you know, a lot of maybe impressionable people can actually view that kind of content and be like, hey, I want to be like this guy, or I want to follow mm-hmm. whatever he says.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So how do you to that line of, you know, exactly. people who actually don't have an understanding about what it is that is being said or what it is that is being read, and how do you get them to be able to at least build that kind of understanding, right? At least be mm-hmm. open to multiple views. And I think at the end of the day, that's the only thing that matters. As long as you're not dismissive of anybody mm-hmm. else's opinion or anybody mm-hmm. else's side, just mm-hmm. take maybe a couple of minutes to take that into account. And then decide whether or not you want to follow them, or maybe you do not want to follow them, right? I think once he mm-hmm. was deplatformed by every single site, that yeah. was the biggest thing that was just violated. It was yeah. was just of choice for people. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think in a world of free speech, people should be able to say whatever they want, but at mm-hmm. the same time, it should be with, like, a very big disclaimer that if they're talking about things that are absolute facts, like things that are originating from science, then, and if they're talking against it, then just the way Twitter does it, right? Like, if you push out any misinformation, then they give you a tag and then just say that, okay, this is what actually happened. And this is what this person says, right? And then just do whatever you want to do with it. And I think that's just a much more unobtrusive way of having free speech, but still giving people useful context about what it is that they're talking about and what it is that they want need to know and understand about before they can make inferences about what is being talked and what is being said.
That was a mouthful. I do think for that to be possible, that happens on an individual scale. It boils down, because what we have essentially done, especially back to the Andrew Tate example and multiple other influencers possibly who have been deplatformed, is we've outsourced our thinking to these platforms and expected them to expect them to censor things. Otherwise, we have no idea what to do with that. It's like a piece of information is given to you. You get to decide, as opposed to, oh, hey, I'm not entirely sure what to do with this. Can you help me? And then everyone in the community, in the centralized community, as it is known, Facebook, Twitter, and the rest, is like, okay, we think by our best sense of judgment, this piece of content is wrong, and we're going to take it down, and we will not give you any, you know, opportunity to sift through the data and try to figure out if it is useful or not. However, this is also very interesting because it boils down into, are we willing, as a community, so that is me, you and I, you know, are we willing to bet that a lot more individuals will be able to think for themselves, or we will use our best judgment from like experience, wisdom, and go, oh, hey, this guy's content, 90% is absolutely toxic. While the 10%, there might be some valuable piece of information there, we do not think that the society at large are capable enough to, you know, to sift through that, right? Now, we can argue that perhaps we are absolutely taking away people's freedom of thought and self-expression, or we could say that we are preserving, you know, the human race, right? Because it really does go that deep. It's actually that relevant to figure out. It's like a parent and a child, right? So the child comes in and maybe they want to have, I don't know, let's say a toy, right? And a couple things into there. So one is, it's ridiculously expensive. Two, it is probably dangerous. But there is a percentage in there that that toy is actually useful. And maybe the child will have some meaningful motor skills, social skills by virtue of owning that piece of, you know, equipment. And then you ask yourself, do I rely on the fact that do I rely on the possibility that this child will gain some useful skills and get them this toy? Or do I preserve the absolute fact of them possibly getting injured and refuse to purchase that toy? Right. So I think that is what happened with the Andrew Tate example, right? It's like, yo, we don't think a lot of people are capable, quote unquote, I'm going to assume they are going to give humans some credit. So that is me assuming that they are giving people some credit to think for themselves. So they came together and they were like, we don't think it's possible that a lot of people can sift through this content and pick out what is valuable, assuming they agree that something even is. And well, that is not impossible, because nothing is absolutely wrong or absolutely right. So, but the majority of what he's saying is, you know, toxic crap or whatever. Therefore, we are going to have to, you know, shut everything down. Yeah. So essentially, I think that was sort of like what happened with that example. And yeah, okay. So I think, yeah. So General, do you have any final thoughts on that before we like move on to the next thing?
Yeah. I think, so if you're talking about the kind of example that you give, right? So if you have an individual that is on the internet and he or she does not have an understanding about what they're reading or what they're seeing online. Mm-hmm. And we have to figure out a way for them to be able to have a good and positive experience. And at the same time, be able to understand the content that they're reading, content that they're publishing, whatever that is actually not how do we get them to be able to form proper, well-informed opinions and understanding about whatever it is, and actually weed out, like, you know, like the toxic masculinity part of it, or, you know, if it's pointing towards, like, you know, some kind of extremist ideology or whatever it is, right? How do we nurture like a proper adult or a proper child on the internet without actually forcing them or deciding or thinking for them?
Yes, exactly. Without taking away the ability to think for themselves. Is that one? So there are multiple questions there. One, is that possible? Two, is that our responsibility, right? The you could say, how if we choose to, if we being whoever is building this tooling for a decentralized social communication layer, when we learn, you could say, about user behavior, try to figure out the content they consume, and, well, I'm assuming there isn't a world that exists where we then start to suggest the type of content they should consume instead, because that then takes us back to what exactly we're building against, which is the Web2 world, where basically the content you see is the content the algorithm chooses to show to you, as opposed to everything you should see. And so I guess the claim with this conversation, or what I'm, the point with this is that for critical thinking to be done and objective reasoning to the extent that it is possible might have to be done at an individual level. That is probably the only level it can be done with an unbiased sentiment, as a, with 100% objectivity. If yes, so that is like my point, if that makes sense, as opposed to the individual relying on platforms to sort of dictate what is right and what is wrong, what is, what should be approved and what shouldn't be.
I mean, the way Twitter does it, right? Right now, it gives you a lot of recommended content, but you can just dig deep into like those settings and actually just display all your, all the tweets of the people that you follow in, chronological order, right? So the new tweets come on the top. It only shows stuff that you want to see. I think that's one way for you to just be able to discover and keep up to date with whatever's happening and whatever stuff that people are putting out, right? At the end of the day, it should, again, as you said, always and always be your choice to be able to form your own opinions. And especially when we're having a question about recommended content, I think, I don't think anybody has an incredibly good answer for it, because there are two ways of thinking about it. First, you're trying to put out content that the user likes. But then at the same time, when you bring in this concept of people actually wanting to make money off of it, then you start putting recommended content that people would like. And at the same time, that it actually achieves an ulterior agenda. Could be of advertisers, could be of the platforms, could be of anything else, right? So it becomes very hard for people to toe that line. And I think it's just an important conversation too. And I also have like my co-founder joining in. So yeah, she'll take the conversation from there.
Hi. Yeah, actually, I was just listening to what you guys were talking about. And so while you were talking about this thing, and I think Anirudh was talking about it, was, you know, recommendation and all of those algorithms, like where tweets start to pop up in like chronological order and all of it. So the thing here is...
Yo, we're back.
Awesome. Yeah, yep. No worries. No worries. Yeah, Twitter Spaces is incredibly cliche. No worries.
Yeah, awesome. Cool. So, where are we? Definitely along the lines of... I think my question... Yes. Okay, yes, I remember where I was. So I was talking about essentially like the... you could say how... if we choose to, if we being whoever is building this tooling for a decentralized social communication layer, when we learn, you could say, about user behavior, try to figure out the content they consume, and, well, I'm assuming there isn't a world that exists where we then start to suggest the type of content they should consume instead, because that then takes us back to what exactly we're building against, which is the Web2 world, where basically, the content you see is the content the algorithm chooses to show to you, as opposed to everything you should see. And so I guess the claim with this conversation, or what I'm, the point with this is that for critical thinking to be done and objective reasoning to the extent that it is possible might have to be done at an individual level, that is probably the only level it can be done with an unbiased sentiment, as a, with 100% objectivity. If yes, so that is like my point, if that makes sense, as opposed to the individual relying on platforms to sort of dictate what is right and what is wrong, what is, what should be approved and what shouldn't be.
I mean, the way Twitter does it, right? Right now, it gives you a lot of recommended content, but you can just dig deep into like those settings and actually just display all your all the tweets of the people that you follow in chronological order, right? So the new tweets come on the top. It only shows stuff that you want to see. Mm. I think that's one way for you to just be able to discover and keep up to date with whatever's happening and whatever stuff that people are putting out, right? Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, it should, again, as you said, always and always be your choice to be able to form your own opinions.
Mm.
And especially when we're having a question about recommended content, I think I don't think anybody has an incredibly good answer for it, because there are two ways of thinking about it. First, you're trying to put out content that the user likes. But then at the same time, when you bring in this concept of people actually wanting to make money off of it, then you start putting recommended content that people would like. And at the same time, that it actually achieves an ulterior agenda. Could be of advertisers, could be of the platforms, could be of anything else, right? So it becomes very hard for people to toe that line. And I think it's just an important conversation to see. And I also have like my co-founder joining in. She'll take the conversation from there.
Sure.
Hey, hi. Hi,
hi. Okay. Hi.
Actually, I was just listening to what you guys were talking about. And so while you were talking about this thing, and I think Anirudh was talking about it, was, you know, recommendation and all of those algorithms, like where tweets start to pop up in like chronological order and all of it. So the thing here is that you can't truly decide for somebody what's good for them, what's not. But there's a small thing here to notice, that I might read a couple of tweets about from a certain person of a certain type. Maybe he endorses a certain type of masculinity, or like sort of. I'm not going to categorize somebody here. But then what happens is, if I see that tweet once, do I start to get more and more and more recommendations of that sort? Now that creates a small problem there. Because what happens is, how do we form opinions? It's like over a period of time, right? Like you get one tweet a day and then you think maybe this is right or maybe this is wrong. But when you start to get burgeoned by these, like, you know, bombed by these tweets, like of a certain type, then you do not even understand when you actually got, you know, motivated by them, or like your thinking about them changed. And that's how it works for everybody.
Yes.
So I can't say, or you can't say, we can't decide it for somebody. But what we can surely do is, maybe like take it from less from like a profit perspective, more like from a societal growth perspective, that we need to see more in order to grow more, right? And to form like more educated opinions, we need to hear both the sides in any given conversation. 100%. Yeah, right. So yeah, that's something that we really want to address.
Yes. And I agree on that. And I 100% do agree on that. You know, I suppose, you know, what I was alluding to was the fact that most people, well, maybe not most people, some people might fall into, and I guess this is inevitable. This is essentially as old as time in itself, and is as true as anything, where it doesn't matter the piece of information that is presented, certain people will take it out of context, or certain people will take it to the extreme. Doesn't matter what it is. If it is about being good, you know, there is still an extreme to that. If it is about being, you know, a mean person, there are extremes to that. So I think fundamentally, we shouldn't get to dictate, and you rightly said that we shouldn't get to dictate what type of, what piece of information people consume. We might just have to trust that somehow they will make the best possible decision. And even if they do not, at that point in time, they will grow and evolve and, you know, or hopefully have better judgment. And I suppose that is, that might be the case because we're humans. Because again, while we're building a decentralized economy, decentralized social layer, yada, 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 humans get to interact with those things and humans are fallible, humans are flawed. And the only way we get better is by experiencing things and then growing on top of that.
Yeah, totally. That makes like complete sense. And yeah, again, like just adding to exactly what you said, you know, when we were growing up, our parents used to say things to us and we weren't obviously like always fan of what they were telling us.
No.
Right? Yeah. And it was very important for us to hear that. And we realize that now, right? Mm-hmm. And in school, we studied like a lot of subjects. All of them we didn't like. But now we look back and we're like, yeah, that was important for us to study because mm-hmm. like, later on it. Yeah, so it's not we to think that we are grown up and we are like we know what's right and what's wrong is like I think the worst decision that we can make for ourselves that we know everything. We should and as developers we should be like always conscious of the fact that you know feeding somebody what they want is exactly not always the option to go for.
Yes, like, exactly.
Yeah.
So there is the idea that, you know, we cannot sit here and assume that everything we know is we have absolute positive good judgment on what is good and what is wrong. However, we also do not want to have that option taken away from us, right? It's like, as much as I might be flawed in some of my thought processes and the things I think about, it is better that I make those mistakes. It is better that I make those mistakes than I do not have the opportunity to express that in the first place, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think...
Sorry, yeah, you'll have to come again. It was not really... I could not understand what you were
saying. Sure, I can do that. So one of the things you said is, you know, we are going to make a huge mistake if we assume that we know everything, we have good judgment on everything, right? And that is true. However, we cannot then say, because I might be flawed in my thinking, I should have the opportunity to think taken away from me.
Yeah, totally.
Like, yes, exactly. So I need to be able to do it for myself, regardless of how flawed, how wrong I might be. But it makes sense that we experience those mistakes. So a typical example would just be, let's assume Facebook, for example, dictates 100% what the user sees. That has taken away objective reasoning from the user, right? We can argue that maybe Facebook being the parent here thinks what they suggest to users is the right content by research, $100 billion being poured in, you know, human psychology and all of that. And they assume authority over thought because of something they've done. But they've essentially stripped the individual from the ability to think for themselves. And thus, you know, does not, you know, there is no growth that on an individual level. So my point is, as much as I might be wrong in my thinking and my parents might be right, it is better that I am able to think and make mistakes than not be able to think at all.
Yeah, that too, you're right about it. The thing is, here what matters is what the discussion originally was about, which is free speech, right? I mean, I should have the ability to speak about my own opinion. And that does not mean that I am right and the other person's wrong. It just means that I've got my right to say what I feel like. And so there's this beautiful saying, like in India, I don't know, like if it's everywhere, it applies everywhere. So we say, you know, your rights end where my nose begins. So yeah, right. It's very right of you to make a point and say that I think this is, you know, this is a better solution or this is a better way of doing a certain thing, but it is not in anybody's hands or not. It shouldn't be ideally to it decide like for everybody as like, you know, make a collective decision. It should be
The key word there shouldn't be anybody's decision to make that this is the absolute truth and then put a stamp on that as an absolute. 100%. Agree, 100% agree on that.
Yeah.
And I just think that, you know, if you're talking about something that is, well, an absolute fact, maybe you're talking about the elections, maybe you're talking about something that you can't really have misinformation around, then the platform itself, like the podium, the megaphone that you're using to broadcast that kind of information, that kind of knowledge, insight, whatever it might be, there should definitely be guardrails around that. So if you're talking about elections, maybe just put out that, okay, this guy is not an actual democratic, like, representative, like an elected body. He's just saying out of, like, he's just a person who's speaking out of his own sense. Or, like, if you're talking about elections, if it's certain news that maybe an earthquake happened or maybe an exchange just collapsed and everybody should take out their money. I think just the way, you know, Twitter shows, like, an official badge, or the way Twitter shows, you know, okay, this is not actual information, or this might be disinformation. I think those kinds of tags can be publicly sourced, because at the end of the day, you can lie to maybe one person, 100 people, but at the end of the day, collective consciousness might just be maybe not the right way to go, but definitely a positive way to start thinking about, okay, maybe this is not right. Like, because you can't lie to, like, the entire universe.
Mm.
So, yeah, I think there should definitely be guardrails present, especially when you're talking about, like, absolute fact.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. 100%. Okay, so we'll just pivot a little bit. So how exactly do you think does a decentralized social media solve the proposition of absolute free speech, right? Again, moving back to people being the platform for, quote-unquote, speaking freely, how do you think a decentralized social layer solves that? One, that's one. Two, how do we possibly, and I suppose by the time I introduce this type of question, it defeats the purpose of decentralization. How do we possibly prevent, you know, extremists and bad actors? And should we, and is that even, so basically is, how does a decentralized social layer solve the problem of, you know, free speech and possibly encourage that? And is there a world that exists where, you know, the extreme views and ideologies will not be taken, you know, would not take advantage of this? So what are your thoughts on that, right? So, like, are we able to solve free speech with building a decentralized social platform? And then, you know, why we'll have people who will take ideas to the extreme and come on a platform that is decentralized without censorship and voice very radical extreme ideologies? What do we do about that?
So the very important point that you're making here is, like, how do we, like, control, or, like, how do we regulate when, like, you know, something like some sort of extremism is taking place on a certain...
I suppose by the time you introduce regulation and control, it defeats the purpose of decentralization to an extent.
So the thing is, how does extremism, like, become extremism, right?
Mm.
And when does it truly need to be addressed? The point where it needs to be addressed is where people are actually, you know, sort of, it has become like, audible enough, as in, you know, like, people are following a certain person or, like, a certain type of ideology a lot. That's where we need to heed attention to it. If somebody's, like, just, you know, talking within themselves, it does not really matter, right? And so, that's very important. Where do we draw the line that this is actually good or this is actually bad for users? Mm-hmm. So, I think, again, this is very core to how we work, is like letting people initially. So first you stop bombarding people with a certain type of ideology. If they've liked one thing or two things about a certain person, does not mean that they only need to see that person. That in fact means that they need to also see all the other perspectives that are out there. Because at the end of the day, we have to exist together as a society, right? I can't exist in a society where the person living next to me hates me. Mm-hmm. That's it. So that's all the more reason for me to hear what that person is saying, so that I can put my hand around their shoulder and be like, listen, dude, here's what I think. I'm not your enemy, but here's what I am saying. And I think you should listen to me also. Right. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, yeah, I can't be like, if I tell you, dude, you're wrong and you shouldn't say this. I won't be able to make anybody listen to me at the end of the day. So the point here is that all of us, this is what we want us to, you know, somehow come into a sort of behavioral thing on our platform now, where people see somebody spreading this kind of hate or something, some sort of extremist views or ideology on any platform that is, like, related to us or anybody altogether, would be that they sort of people take it personally to address such sort of issues, and then people themselves start marking these people, like people like you and me. If we find somebody being completely, you know, like, you know, some extremist, people like us starting to red flag them, starting to, like, take. So that's what decentralization means at the end of the day, right? Like, we can collectively, through our conscious, take a step, not just one person sitting out there and, like, regulating or controlling things, right? Uh-huh. So that's what we're trying to, like, we're in the process of building, which is, you know, letting people red flag a certain person. You know, like, as in this person, while you read this, are we not still going to block anybody? But then before you listen to something, before you hear something, like there are like, you know, there's parental advisory and sorts of things. Yeah. Kind of something on those lines that, okay, what you're going to see or what you're going to hear, most people tend to say that this is very extremist. So please, you watch out for yourself, not for others. Right. Because if I like, you know, give birth to hate inside me, I'm going to suffer from it the most. Right. So it's our collective decision. I don't like in the near future, we are all going to realize that someday or the other that we'll together have to live in this world and this planet and that we can't live hating each other together. So, yeah, I think there's less to be done as in to control or regulate it, but more to be done to learn to listen to it. And then in a very positive way, reinforce to, you know, like the common, like total understanding of the subject. Rather, yeah, that's it. That's it, I think.
Yeah, so yes, from hearing you, which makes a lot of sense, is the fact that one, opinions should be allowed to be voiced regardless of whatever they are, and then two, conversations should be had on those opinions to see if there is a way to refine them, right? Assuming they are, you know, again, let's say someone comes in and say, yo, I really do think the earth is flat, period. That's it. That's what I think, like 100%. There's nothing you can tell me. And then we're like, bro, do you mind? I, you know, here are a couple papers you want to read. And then maybe you go over this and tell me what you think. And then they're like, nope, there's nothing you can tell me. The earth is flat, yada, 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 yada. Here are also papers that I think you should read on proof that the earth is flat. And essentially that back and forth dialogue with the hope of informing and educating the individual is sort of, you could say, the power of decentralization and Web3, regardless, quote unquote, of the facts, if they agree with you or not. But the privilege to educate is what is key. Does that make sense, essentially?
Yeah, it totally makes sense. It's in fact, makes sense. Totally does.
Awesome, cool. So what is the Convo Spaces role in all of this, right? Like, you know, from, because a lot of this goes down into human psychology, like it moves beyond writing software. It goes down, you know, some people just have really interesting ideologies from like their birth. So, but there is that. However, though, what is, you know, the Convo Spaces, you know, role in driving this, in sort of ensuring a more freer nation state as far as speech is concerned, you could say, and how we can do that in as safe of a way, of a manner as possible. Because as much as there is a centralization of freedom of thought and freedom of speech, we want to ensure that there's also some form of safety. So, you know, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, okay. You could not have framed that question better, okay? So here's what I think is that the point of role. I think that, like, the platforms of Web2 and they have played a role that they should not have. We were like, we need to know who we were, right? We need to know that, right? I'm just one person and I cannot decide for a fellow other human being what they should see all the time.
Exactly,
or like,
exactly.
You know, and I think that's exactly what Convo Space is going to do, is it's going to give you all the facilities to have your voice heard and for you to be able to hear other voices. We are not going to play any role in deciding what you need to hear and what you do not, because every other platform out there is doing that. And I think, see, I always take this example, is like, if you were born in like the industrial era and all of that time, you would rate junk food as like, that was the go-to food. People who had it, you know, were like, oh, they've made it. They can go to McDonald's, they can go to KFC all the time. They want to. Right? That had kind of become the standard. And we like kids playing around, oh man, I went to, you know, like that new food joint and it was all junk food. Now we call it junk food, right? And now we're moving towards whole foods and things. So it as much impossible it might seem today that the world, oh, everybody's only gonna view things that they like, they are being suggested, or like this stuff that they like, you know, what they might just love to see. But then there's going to be like overdose of it, and then people will search. That will be really organic. People will come back to be, you know, because after a time it becomes an echo chamber. And if you sit inside an echo chamber, how long will you exist? Like, if you can only hear things that you, yeah, we are humans. We need to hear things that we want to hear, things that we want to hear. But at the end of the day, we can't exist in it. We can't exist inside echo chambers. We can't grow inside echo chambers. And there'll be a time where people themselves will start looking for things like that. And we will have no role to play in that. We will have no role to play in that. People will find us. And I think that's how we'll drive the growth. And that's how organic we want it to be.
Yeah. Yeah, that is amazing. You know, just going back to echo chambers, and you know, one thing you said is we want to hear what we want to hear, but more often than not, we need to hear what we need to hear. So things that aren't palatable, that quote unquote, that challenges our worldview, that puts us on edge, those are things we need to listen to, because otherwise we're in a bubble and we have no idea what the outside world is thinking about, how thoughts are being processed and all of that. And without that, we aren't technically capable of making better judgments, because the only thing we know are the things we've always known. And that is very interesting. And the last point you made about, you know, we being the converse space might not have a role to play, is essentially a lot of this boils down to individuals choosing to hopefully think and make better judgments, and we do not dissolve as a society into people who just have lost our sense of reasoning. Because if that isn't the case, then, well, doesn't matter how decentralized of a platform we build, you know, everyone just, you know, becomes, what would you call it, a sheep, and nothing else can be done from there on.
Yeah. Also, a very intelligent person I was talking to said to me that, you know, we do not need everybody to change. We just need the few on the top, like, to change in order to create a, you know, like an effect where everybody just, so we're not there. So anybody you look at, any platform, anything, there was this, like, it started with a few people and then it just, like, you know, it creates an effect goes.
So essentially we just need a few, you could say, thought leaders who are hopefully objective in their reasoning and not extremist in their ideologies. That way we're able to, you know, they are able to drive forward positive growth and change and encourage a healthy society that thinks for themselves, that that isn't extremist in their views, and that are, you know, able to have healthy, sane conversation, debate, arguments that, you know, hopefully do not result to very dangerous things happening.
True.
Cool. We'll be rounding up in a bit. I have just a couple questions. What are your final thoughts on free speech? So we've talked about a decent amount of things, quite honestly. But essentially, what are your final thoughts? And how important do you think this is as we are growing as a society that is heavily reliant on content? You know, we live off of content, YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, you know, a lot of the things people think are just echoes of things people have said. So, but how do we, well, what are your final thoughts on free speech, essentially?
So, okay, I'll like maybe give you a very abstract answer, starting from a very abstract answer. So one day I sat down with a pencil in my hand, I was trying to draw something, okay? Mm. And I decided for myself, I said, I'm not going to draw anything that I've seen ever before in my life. Right. All right. And so the first thing I drew was like, sort of looked like an arc. And I was like, here's the thing, like, how, like, to which point do I boil it down? Like, in order to hold that pencil, I need to, like, remember how my teacher in the first grade or, like, the KG taught me how to hold a pencil. Right. So how do I start, like, individually? Like, I'll not copy anything from anywhere. Mm. But, like, any dot that I draw on that pencil, it's never going to be mine. It's never totally going to be.
That someone taught you, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, we're always referencing. We're always, always referencing. Mm. So what do we call?
There
what do we
say? There is an absolute free individual that exists outside of the collective.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm always gonna borrow. I'm always gonna borrow either from somewhere or the other. Mm. So I say, when you have 7 or 8 billion people to borrow from, why listen to like 1 billion people or 500 million or let's say 1,000 people out there, right? So free speech, like, quote unquote, free speech, the word free here means that I am free to speak whatever I want to and free to express what I want to express. And then the second thought that comes, like the next thought is that, hey, what do I want to say? Like, what do I want to say? What, that thing that I heard the other day and the thing that I thought about something. And then, like, most of it really goes back to what I was taught in the childhood. And then, you know, we sort of develop these filters, and whatever we hear, we like filter them through it. And then we think it's our thought. Like, and like, I'll tell you, the funniest thing is even the language that we talk in was taught to us. So that's also not ours. Leave up, put about the thoughts that we think. So No, free speech is like, I can think like what I'm saying is like the absolutely like my privilege and my right to say that. But then is it like, do I own what I'm saying? Do I really own? Have I given it enough thought from 360 degrees over the 360 that what I'm saying cannot be like, you know, boiled down more and cannot be like cut through? So you talk about like a guy talking about abortion or anything. So have I looked? I'm not saying you should be. I'm not gonna like come into that like pro-abortion or anti-abortion.
Right.
I'm just saying, have I thought of it from every possible direction? And is there nothing left that I can do about it? And then reach that conclusion, and then that's when you talk about it, right? That's actual free speech. You give it to yourself. Don't give it to others. Don't give your free speech to others. Your free speech first to yourself, right? Like, and then own that opinion. Own that opinion, but that does not mean that you still become resilient or like deaf to what others have to say out there. That's only when. So I'll tell you, you, I, or anybody else, we think we have a certain thought process. We think that thought process is right, and we listen to others in a way that we can tell them how we are right. I think that needs to change inside our heads, and we need to listen to people in order to own their conversation. Okay, I want to like accept what you're saying. So make me accept what you're saying. Put me into your shoes, if you can, if you may. And then the point where I reach, I'll call that free speech for that moment. And that will be what I own in that moment. It will not come out of like one day I sit in my room, my bedroom, and I decide this is what should be done for the world. No, that's not. We need to get out there. We need to talk to everybody. And then we need to have as many opinions. What are opinions? What are opposing opinions? They are like knives. They are like sandpapers. They like rob you through and cut you through until you reach the core of what you want to say. That is your free speech, man. Then use it. Use it for good. Use it for better. Use it for growth. That's free speech. There's not a lot to it. And I think, you know, I'll tell you mostly, how do I decide whether or not somebody is like talking sane or not? It's mostly you'll hear people with like views that are not, you know, like about growth and not about positivity.
Right.
After a time, they'll stop listening to you. They will either walk out of the room. They'll either say, oh man, I don't know what you're talking about. And the people who will have something to add to the conversation and something to like grow with, they will want to sit there. They will want to grow, right? In the end of the day, and that's it. So we need to decide for ourselves first and most what is going to be, how am I going to use this privilege that I have of like having, you know, a platform which does not, I mean, earlier you had a podium that you had to walk up to and that you had to like live up to, right? You had to be of a certain post and a certain degree in order to achieve that status, and then thousands of people will gather to hear you. Mm-hmm. Now you have to just like type 10 words out of your bedroom, out of your bathroom, out of your toilet, anywhere, yada, right? Mm-hmm. And the entire world is out there listening to you. So we'll have to own up to that responsibility. And there is nothing such as your opinion. There is only something is more and more opinions, more and more thoughts, and more talks about stuff. And we need to have talks like this to elevate our level, to elevate our understanding of what truth is, not more talks on how it's just like core talks on development and, you know, coding. Yeah, just like more philosophical talks about, you know, because like Facebook core team, I don't see one person who would have like taken up psychology in their like majors or something. No one person. Like, who are you to decide what I should see on Facebook? What do you know about me? What do you know about human psychology?
Exactly. You know, honestly, yeah. Amazing points. I'm speechless, mostly because a lot of the things you mentioned are things that I've been thinking about for a while. Some of them I have written down, you know, to refine my thinking on a lot of them. And yes, people, and one thing I'll just mention is I love how the conversations we have here at That Place, you know, moves consistently or in between from like tech to philosophy and psychology, because as much as we are building technical tools, for humans, and humans are very, very, very emotionally driven people. There is a lot of psychological and philosophical ideologies at the core of the things we do, the decisions we make. And so when, you know, engineers build tools, they just build tools with the coolest, you know, equipment and the tools they have, because as opposed to thinking about the individual who will interact with this tool. You know, you mentioned, you know, the example with the picking up a pencil and trying to draw something that has never been drawn. And then it's like, yeah, to do that, there is no way I can do that without having to make reference to the things that have been thought, you know, taught to me. And you could ask yourself, how far back do I want to go at eliminating all of the things that have been given to me just so I can be original, right? And then it begs the question of what exactly does it mean to be original, right? You know, does original exist outside of everything else, or is original a consequence of everything else, right? So yeah. It's an interesting way to think about it, and free speech is free thinking, and people who are able to think freely are able to express themselves, are able to articulate themselves, and are able to make, you know, reasonable judgments about the world around them. And it's a beautiful time to be alive. And you know, thank you guys for the privilege.
Yeah, okay, I'll just say this to you. Just go and type it somewhere or write it somewhere. You said it, like, you boiled it down to the absolute perfect phrasing. You said, if you're able to think freely, then you're able to speak freely, and you're able to, like, be heard freely. That's it. That's the summary of the conversation. Yeah.
Also, as the summary of the conversation, so again, the importance of decentralized conversations, you could say, is about free thinking and free speech. So yes, that is the importance of decentralized conversations. So thank you, everyone, for joining us. This has been amazing. Thank you, Anudit, and your co-founder. Thank you, Nerbik, from the DAP place. And thank you, guys. It's been amazing. I hope you guys had so much fun. I had, you know, a shit ton of fun. Started yesterday because the conversation we had with Anudit on Discord and, like, getting into and building up onto this point has been a lot of fun. And yes, I think we have a question from Nerbik. He's writing that down because I think his internet is bad. So I'll just read that out real quick. How exactly does the blockchain, and how are we able to compose data and as we, you know, build this tool that the Convo Space is building?
Yeah, I think composability of conversation just boils down to what are sort of just the elements of conversations, right? If you talk about a message, then it's just a text coupled with maybe an image, a video, and a bunch of other elements, like about where it's coming from, what are we actually talking about, the context that is. Once we actually have that kind of information and it's just all available, then we can start using, maybe if it's all available on a blockchain or off-chain, on-chain, it doesn't really matter. But once we have all of that data, we can start linking it up into, like, new and beautiful ways and actually just giving people all the tools to be able to do that. And once we have all of those tools, we can at least make an attempt at building platforms that are more composable, that operate on all different websites, so that any and all conversations, the thoughts that we have, the stuff that we put out on the internet, isn't just limited and locked into just Twitter, maybe, or maybe just Discord, or maybe just OpenSea. And then we can finally have, like, a decentralized conversation layer of the internet where conversations can not just move between sites, but actually add value to whatever is being talked about and actually be able to query all that information from anywhere you want.
All right, awesome. Awesome. So yes, essentially the Convo Space is factoring in the future that exists where conversations are had across chain and had across multiple platforms.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right. Thank you again, everyone. Until next time, have a great day. Stay safe and take it easy.